Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience as well as those tuning in online. Seize the day. That's something that you've heard us talk about on this program quite a bit. In fact, a lot of my fans know that I'm a great big believer in not only being able to make the most of every day that we have, but also, of course, to be able to inspire other people along the way. For many people who remember the movie Dead Poets Society, that was a big part of that, of what Robin Williams tried to encourage others to do. And our next guest has been able to do the same thing, not only in his own life, but also through his same book, the book by the same name, Seize the Day, as well. I'm talking about Curtis Bunn. He's making his first appearance on our program today to talk to us not only about his literary journey, but what it's been like for him to do what he loves and to be able to share that with all of you. I recently announced that Seize the Day was one of our top books for this year, and I think after this conversation, you'll definitely see why. Curtis, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Cyrus, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Hey, man, I appreciate the time. You know, congratulations to you on what is really an amazing read, and we're going to be getting more into the day here in a moment, especially even the cover. There's so much even in the cover of the book that I think we'll be able to take away. First of all, Curtis, what has this journey been like for you? Because many people know you not only as a best-selling author, but also as a founder of the National Book Club Conference. What has it been like for you to not only share your love of words with the world, but the way that you've been able to see the way people around the world respond to it?
It's been quite an interesting journey, Cyrus, one I never anticipated for myself. When I was 13 years old, I knew what I wanted to do, and I pursued it as a journalist. So my background is really as a sports journalist for 30-plus years. I went to Norfolk State University, majored in journalism, graduated with a degree, and began my career working at the St. Petersburg Times, Washington Times, New York Daily News, Newsday, and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, where I covered sports for many, many years. The New York Knicks, I traveled the world with them. I covered the NBA. I covered Super Bowls, championship boxing, pretty much you name every major sport and sporting event, the Olympics in Australia, the Olympics in Korea. I have done that. Mm-hmm. But all along, I was always an avid reader. Walter Mosley was one of my favorite authors that I read consistently, John Grisham, among others. And I read Waiting to Exhale in 1992, I think it was, and on the beach in Hawaii on a vacation, and I really enjoyed it. But I came away saying, you know what, I can tell this story. I can just do a story from a male's perspective about relationships and give the perspective of what men think about women and situations. And I sat on that notion for about 7 or 8 years before I finally wrote my first novel, Baggage Check, in 2001. And Baggage Check ended up being a book that really revealed to me that I had something to say beyond writing other people's stories. I had things in my mind and imagination that I could share. And Baggage Check ended up number one on the Essence bestsellers list. And from there, I've been writing almost a book a year, maybe a book every year and a half. And it's been a journey that's been very rewarding. I put a lot of time into it. And the National Book Club Conference actually was birthed through my meeting with book clubs. I travel around the country meeting with book clubs all the time, but at the time it was for Baggage Check. And I left each meeting feeling spirited and uplifted, like I do when I leave church, like I was better for the experience and like I had learned something. And it just came to me that somebody ought to do something where you can bring readers and authors together in an intimate environment and share your perspective with the author and get the author's feedback, and it really enhances the reading experience. So I know I said a whole lot there, but this journey to becoming an author is something that was happenstance, not something that I projected for my life. My career goal was always to be a journalist, and I achieved that at a high level, and it's been a great run. I'm still writing as a journalist, but the author side allows me to free up my imagination and share different stories from different angles.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that has been why you've been able to garner the following you've been able to garner, Curtis, when it comes to your books, because I think because of the journalism background, you kind of bring us, you know, a deep perspective into individuals and characters that you've been able to create. You know, the interesting thing about the character you've created in Seize the Day, Calvin Jones, in his journey, is that he is someone who has not only been able to teach, but he's also been able to learn, and he was able to learn Unfortunately, you know, you might say because of a diagnosis he was given, but I think fortunately for him, because he was able to realize what really matters. Is that something you could resonate with as well?
Sure. I had a friend who was diagnosed with terminal cancer a few years back, and I didn't see her much, but I did watch her and speak to her, and I saw her in her journey, and when she picked herself up off the floor, I just thought it was just tremendous courage that she displayed in order to live her life, to try to go. She continued to work for a while. She continued to communicate with her family and to raise her son and really kind of prepare him and prepare herself. And it's just a position that we just can't, no matter how much we try to put ourselves in, we cannot put ourselves there emotionally unless we were there. We just can't walk in those people's shoes. And so I just thought that was a very interesting dynamic. Excuse me. And the other part of it is, like you, listening to you in the intro, I appreciate life to the utmost. My parents instilled that into me all, as a kid. And so I traveled a lot and tried to do the things that really make me feel like I'm living a fulfilling life. But there's so many others who hold back. And so I thought this is an opportunity to tell a story where you can not only try to put yourself and look at the perspective of so many people who get this diagnosis, this horrible diagnosis of terminal cancer, but also how they live their life. And if they're living their life understanding that their ticket has been punched, so to speak, we all know intuitively that we're going to die one day. That's just the way that it is. But to know that you have an expiration date when it is coming 3 to 6 months, how you live your life is an opportunity for us to look at those people and say, wow, if they can get off the canvas, get off the floor and say, I'm going to do things that satisfy me, knowing that their time is coming, why can't we do that not knowing when our time is coming and appreciate what we have now?
Exactly. You know, you just said something that really was one of the big things for me, which is why this was one of the best books for me this year, Curtis, and that was none of us know when that day will be. I think, you know, whether you have a diagnosis or not, no one knows. And I think, you know, this day could be that day, and it is that day for so many people, you know.
Right.
And I think what really matters is what you've been able to do. I want to share one of the things, one of the two passages I wanted to read from the book. The first one, for those who have the printed edition, is found on page 190, and this is an epiphany that the character Calvin Jones has, and I want to share this and have you talk a little bit about it. The people who get the most out of life are the keenest and the ones who decide to live it. You do that, and you will notice more than the next person and experience more than the average person. You will consume everything and retain a lot of it and become stronger, smarter, and more well-rounded because of it. I loved being a teacher because I loved knowing things and sharing them with kids. But it became my world when the world should have been my world. I finally got that. What has that been like for you as you've been able to go throughout your life and, as you said, to be able to accomplish what you've been able to accomplish and to touch the people you've touched, you know, around the world and to do what you've done? What has it been like for you, Curtis, to realize what really matters and what really is important?
I think that's a great question. And I sign almost every book with the sentence, thank you so much for the support, and I hope you enjoy the book and get something meaningful out of it. For different people, different parts of the book, each book that I write, there will be something that they can hold on to that will be significant to them. In my book, A Cold Piece of Work, I had a young lady named Serena Knight that I met through the book. She emailed me and told me that there was a scenario in the book that really related to her, and she was able to deal with it and her children better because of the way it played out in the book. I never anticipated that when I wrote it, but I know I wrote it with the idea that maybe it could hurt it could help someone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the important part of writing for me. I write to entertain, to make you laugh, to make you touch emotions in you that you may not even want to be touched or know that they were there. But in the end, I want you to take something away from it, to be inspired. And so this is a departure for me, this book, because usually my books are really about men, black men, how we deal with women in relationships and why we behave the way that we do and why do we think the way that we think and why women think we're the ninth wonder of the world. You can't figure us out. But so this is a departure in that sense, but it's also still a relationship book because it's about his relationship with his job. It's about Calvin's relationship with his coworker, Walter, his relationship with his daughter, his relationship with himself. And that's the biggest one with himself. I think the relationship that we probably all ignore the most is a relationship that we have with ourselves. Are we doing enough for ourselves? Because most people, I believe, I tend to be very optimistic. Most people are giving and caring and want to make sure the people around them are comfortable. And sometimes we sacrifice our own happiness for that. At the same time, we only have one life to live. And so
Right. That's
not to say to be selfish by any stretch, because I believe in being unselfish. I think unselfishness is a beautiful quality to have. But we have to be selfish about our own happiness. And our own happiness can manifest itself in going to the movies once a week when you feel like, you know, I don't feel like going out. Last night I had the launch party for Seize the Day. Amazing turnout. And I told them that they were pretty much the embodiment of one of the underlying themes of the book, which is it was a Tuesday night. Many of the people didn't live near where we had the event, but they came out in huge numbers. So they did it. They made the sacrifice when they could have been at home getting ready for the next day, relaxing, whatever else that they may do on a Tuesday. So it's those kind of sacrifices that people make that makes them happy is a small part of seizing the day, seizing the moment, doing what works for you. And it was so ironic because one of the women who I was discussing when I was signing her book, she said, well, some of my girlfriends wanted to come, but they said, you know, it's Tuesday. They don't feel like coming out on a Tuesday. And I said, that's just perfect for the book and what I want to talk about when I get a chance to talk. So seizing the day can be big things. It can be little things. And in the story, Calvin, in his discovery or rediscovery of himself, the world opens up to him in big ways and small ways. And so for me, that's what has happened also as a journalist, meeting so many people, talking to them about their lives, talking to them about their relationships, their children, whatever it may be, and having some small impact, or at least sometimes it's just being a sounding board. So there's so many elements to this that kind of relate to so many different people in different ways.
Yeah, I think that is so true. And I think the other thing, though, that you did, and I mentioned this in my review on Amazon, Curtis, and I think it really kind of brings a timeliness to this. Again, here was this man, Calvin, who, you know, was you know, coming to peace with what was to come. And along the way, though, he was thinking about all that was happening in the world. Part of that, of course, was the climate when it came to race and the racial tension that was there. That was a powerful part of the book. I mean, did you know going into sharing Calvin's journey was looking at life and making the most of the day that you wanted to be able to inject some of what was, you know, really ripped from the headlines when it came to what was going on in the country, when it came to the racial tension and also the tension between, so, you know, citizens and the police?
I did not go into it when I was writing the book. There was a part when all of it was piling up. Trayvon Martin had already happened, but Freddie Gray, Tamir Rice, and so many others were piling one on top of another, and it's very, very disturbing to me and hopefully to so many other people. But their lives were taken from them, and here's a guy who was looking at it where his life was being taken, but in a different fashion. I'm very political. I pay attention to politics. I think it's obviously very important to the world and to the world that we're living in, especially as African Americans. And so, but I didn't want to be preachy about it. I definitely wanted to inject it to a point where you were able to think about it and kind of look at it as how a man who knows that he's dying looks at it, as opposed to just pounding on it in a way in which it would be over the top. So I appreciate the fact that you brought that up, because that's a small – it's only a page or two in the book. But that's what writing – I think for me, when I write certain parts of in a book, I wonder if people will get it. I mean, there's so many elements to a 90,000-word book, and so many words and so many twists and turns that a lot of times people are looking for the drama, the whodunit moment, and they miss some of the smaller details. I just feel like it's very important, and also it's important for me when I write books that they are authentic, that they are timely, and it just made sense to me at the time that here's a man going through this struggle with his life, and he's watching men or people like him being shot, being taken down around the country, and his perspective was, I think, something that is certainly different from everyone else's.
Right. I think that is it. And I think, too, the other reason why I wanted to bring it up is because, you know, even though, like you said, it's not a big part of the book, you know, you have, you know, these two chapters that really deal with it, I think, in a big way. You know, the one chapter, mm-hmm. you know, Black Lives Matter being one. And then, of course,
yes.
The other chapter that really struck me was Captain Sabaho. I think, you know, when we're reading this and you're thinking about what this man is going through, and this is the other thing that I think is so important for our audience out there, and this is one thing I want to talk about with you, Curtis, and that is we know what Calvin is going through because he's the one who you chose to allow to tell his story. We mm-hmm. don't know people who we see every day what they're going through, you know, what their lives are like, and what they're having to contend with. You know, all we may see is a snapshot of something they do or say or whatever. Is that also part of your hope that we will look at people differently and realize that there's more to us than sometimes we realize?
Absolutely. I'm going to digress a little bit to my previous book, which is called The Old Man in the Club. I wrote that book not because I wanted to talk about a dirty old man, but because we're judgmental. We see a guy in a club who's we think is too old to be there and say, why is he in here? And I wanted to tell the story of what his life was about. And that's about judging people and seeing that like you said, that snapshot of them. And the snapshot is that he's 61 and the people in the club are 25 to 30 and he seems out of place. But there's far more to his story. And that's what the intention of the book was to tell about his life and why he's there. Just as with Calvin, you know, we don't know. We're among people. There's another part in the book where he's sitting there and he says, you know, the waiter's serving him and he's eating by himself. And he's like, she doesn't even know she's serving a dead man walking. And we just have no notion of what people are going on in their what are going on in people's lives. Sometimes when I may get bad service at a restaurant or someone is not as pleasant as I think it could be, and I say something, and my wife will say, well, maybe she's having a bad day. You don't know what's going on in her world. And that really, something, she said that to me, and that gave me pause. And I said, I would always say generally, it's inexcusable if you're working, but at the same time, it hammers home your point. We don't know what's happening in people's lives. We can't base who they are based on our small snapshot of them. And maybe along the way we'll be a little more tolerant and less impatient with people because things are going on in their world that we just don't know about. Just as stuff is going on in our world, we don't know about. People that you know, you can determine pretty quickly whether they're having a good day or a bad day based on how they act. But if you don't know someone and you just see them, you really don't know what it's about. So the judgmental element and really not making these preconceived notions of people is certainly a part of what the book is about, and just that people are walking amongst us who have so many issues that when we have a bad day, we're like, oh, this is terrible. And it could be just because, you know, we lost our cell phone, but other people are walking among us who have far more significant concerns, particularly health concerns.
Yeah, I think that is it. And, you know, I bring that up for another reason, Curtis. Again, we can talk around this, not to spoil anything mm-hmm. for those who haven't read the book yet. We'll tell them a little bit later how they can get it. But there's a conversation with Eugene, you know, in the mm-hmm. book. And Eugene
yes.
not knowing who he was talking to initially.
Yes.
You know, and you know, here was, you know, Calvin kind of taking all of this in, especially when it came to faith. And that's the last thing I wanted to bring up here because,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a lot of people when it comes to diagnosis, and we see it especially through social media, you know, people will ask you to pray for them. They'll tell you a little bit about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like for you to go through this, what was really what seemed to be at least a tumultuous journey that Calvin was
yes.
having with faith and reconciling that with what was happening to him?
Yeah, it was actually a very emotional book to write. You really, as an author, have to take yourself to different places emotionally to really connect to the people that you created in your head. I thought one of my favorite passages in the book or chapters in the book was early in the book. The chapter was called The Power of Prayer. When he finally gets himself up and he goes to see a pastor, and he's not that religious, but he's spiritual. And he says, the pastor prays with him and asks him, and he says, well, I just want to know why me? And the pastor says, why not you?
Right.
Don't use this as a, basically he says, don't use this as a curse, but it's a blessing for you to bless other people and just tell people that you love how much you care about them. And it was a perspective that took him to a different place. He was taken aback by it, but he hadn't remotely considered that. He just felt like it was bad luck or that God was against him because he knows God is all-powerful. So I think everyone has the question, why me? And on small things, if somebody runs into the back of your car, you're like, oh, why me? And you're really serious about it because it could have been, you know, if you had left the house a minute earlier, it wouldn't have been you or it could have been someone else. But in the case of someone saying your life is over, it's going to be over in 6 months, we've done all the tests, we've had all the experts look at it, there's nothing that can, we're familiar with this cancer, and there's nothing we can do about it, the logical question has to be, why me, at some point. And so when you have a spiritual foundation like Calvin had, it makes you question God. And at some point, you have to feel, you have to, if you're human, you have to, and I mean, some of the strongest people in the world I know are those who say, who would say, you know, I didn't question God, it's his will. But most of us, even though we feel spiritual, consider ourselves spiritual, we'll have that question at some point. And so his journey, as he's coming across people and talking like Eugene and living out his life those last few months, his spiritual foundation is becoming more and more solid, because while he's not happy that he's going to die, he still struggles with it every night, cries himself to sleep on most nights. He understands that it's God's will. And it's a long road to travel from why me, I'm going to die, to get into that place and come into peace with it. And so I thought that was a very intricate part of the book. It's a very nuanced part because when you start talking religion and spirituality, it's very personal to everyone. But for Calvin, it was difficult to write in a sense because it was emotional, but it was also very enlightening for me because I looked at my own mortality the entire time I was writing this book. How do people look at me? Am I doing enough for everyone? Am I making the most out of my days? Am I being the best husband I can be, the best father, the best friend, the best son? So many questions. And so for me, that's where the book is eye-opening, and I hope that those who read it will have that same feeling at the end, or even as you're reading it. Maybe not, you won't even get to the end before you get to that place where you say, wow, am I doing enough? And I would venture to say most of us are doing well, but probably we could do more. And so I'm hoping that we get out of it, that the reader gets out of it that I can do more, I can be better, and enjoy the journey. But as I said earlier, take something meaningful out of it.
Yeah. And I think also to kind of go back to how we began this conversation, Curtis, you referenced the event, celebrating the release of the book. It goes to something else that is a great parallel to Calvin, and that is we never know sometimes the people we impact along the way by the way we live our lives. And I think what you experienced was a testament to how you have been able to live your life and what you've been able to contribute. And ironically, for Calvin, he experienced the same thing. There were people who wanted to give to him, some in ways that others could not, you know, as we in the book. I mean, wanted to show what he meant. And I think that is another thing that we never know. And it really goes to why it's so important that we're careful about that, about the imprint we're making, because we never know how far those ripples, you know, will go. You know, and how even though we may go, whether it's leaving this world altogether or leaving a certain place, there's a part of us behind that stays. And I think that is the great thing. Again, everyone, Curtis Bunn has been our guest for this segment. Great conversation with you, Curtis. The new book is Seize the Day. It's out now. You can get it through our friends at Amazon.com or through wherever you normally buy your books online or your favorite bookstore. If they don't have it, they'd be more than happy to order it for you. Curtis, how can our audience stay connected with you and keep up with you?
I have a website, CurtisBunn.com. That's CURTISBUNN. Two ends on bun.com. I'm on Facebook as Curtis Bunn. Twitter is Curtis Bunn, and Instagram is Curtis Bunn. And I love hearing from readers. I'm very adamant about responding promptly. So please, if you read the book, give me your thoughts. If you have any questions about the book, and if you have, or if you're in a book club, I would love to come to your book club meeting and help you facilitate the discussion.
All right. So there you have the invitation from the man himself. Curtis, again, congratulations to you, not only on the book, but all that you've been able to do for book clubs and for authors and readers. We appreciate you and looking forward to the next conversation with you.
Cyrus, thank you. Best interview I've ever had.
Well, look, I appreciate that. That's an honor coming from you for sure. I appreciate that. And we appreciate you, our audience, for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late and you missed part of the conversation, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media site, so you guys can find it on Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. We've already tagged Curtis, his Facebook fan page, and his Twitter handle there to make it easy for you all to find him, too. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.